songwriting. And it seemed like that was the kind of music that Joe and I can definitely relate to. And then we started together, and we had another guy who was playing drums at the time. And we started this trio. And around 2015, we had a whole bunch of songs. We were doing what like a lot of the other bands were doing here around this area. We had a handful of originals, a whole bunch of covers. And we just started playing, you know, friends events and you know, whatever charity events we could find. And then probably around 2016, the drummer left, and then it was just Joe and I. But we weren't stopping. We were constantly writing more and more and more material. And we finally got to a point where we had so many songs, and we were thinking, like, well, what do we do? We've been trying to find another drummer. We've been trying to do all these different things to kind of fill out the band. So we finally just had a heart-to-heart, and they said, you know what, Joe, why don't you learn the drums? You know, a totally natural thing to ask someone. And he went, okay. And he learned the god darn drums, and he did an amazing job at what would be our first record, which is called Of One. I wake up to the same old fuckery telling me I gotta drive. It's 2 hours of seething and seating still open.
Sorry, 2017, didn't it?
I think 2017, yeah. So that was, I'm always going to keep saying this. He gets the MVP for A, learning the drums, learning how to play 20. He had to record, I think, 22 songs.
Right.
And he had some basic drum skills before he started playing with this band. So it wasn't like completely from scratch, but still, nonetheless, I don't envy what he had to go through to do that first record. So in the end, it was decided, you know what, Joe, instead of us wanting to fill up the band with a bassist and a drummer and you being the second guitar player, let's just go, you know what, let's just be a trio. Let's just keep it simple, keep it tight. You're basically the heart with the way you play the drums. You're obviously propelling the music the way it's supposed to. So you stay there. He agreed to that. And then we spent a long time trying to find that third element, you know, getting a bass player in so we can really round it out and start playing live. That was the biggest hurdle, is just finding someone.
That was it. And then you settled on your most recent bass player? Or did you go through any more?
Well, nope. He was our only choice in the end, who was a friend of ours from years ago. So Ryan Linfat was in a band with Joe many, many, many years ago called Makeshift. And he was our first choice when we were actually going to record the first record. But due to work and life and stuff at the time, he couldn't participate.
Right.
So once the album was done, we asked him again, and you know the timing was right. And he went, "Yeah, I'll join," or "Yeah, I'll check it out." And we found out that when we got him in the mix, his voice—he has a beautiful voice.
Right.
And we found that chemistry-wise, our harmonies really worked well together. I mean, I was blown away because, like I said earlier, I'm a studio rat, so I'm used to multi-tracking my own voice over and over and over again and hearing myself, which is actually quite grating to myself and my wife. To actually have this other beautiful voice that complemented mine and we can do stuff together was absolutely amazing. So it changed the dynamic of the band of just being, okay, me singing all these songs and being grunting and angry and whatnot. And now we have this anchor who's a great bass player. And, sorry, my wife is saying, I kept telling you to get him ages ago, so
we're
always being right.
That's funny.
So he came into the fold very quickly, and we instantly gelled. And our first release with him was we covered Used to Love Her by Guns N' Roses. And what we wanted to demonstrate with that single was our cohesion with the vocals, because we took the song and we made it a two-part harmony to the whole thing.
I used to love her, but I had to kill her. I used to love her, but I had to kill her.
And that came out in, you did that 2018, and then you released more material in 2019, Mr. Soul.
Yes. So Mr. Soul was is another cover, Buffalo Springfield.
Right.
Neil Young.
When you were covering these songs and you said, yeah, okay, so there's a vocal cohesion to this, so it feels very comfortable for us. Are these the type of songs that you guys had in your cover set as well that you were pulling off live?
Used to Lover was a work in progress. When we first got together, we tried it a few times, and I really hated it. It just didn't sound right because we were playing it too close to, I think, the original.
Mm-hmm.
And then one night, I got this idea. I just said, you know what, screw it. I'm going to change. I'm going to basically rewrite it to change the keys, going to change the feel, and see if it feels good. And then it just gelled after the arrangement came in. And we all, you know, agreed, like, wow, this feels really good. Mr. Soul came in around the same time, too. Maybe just before Ryan joined the band, me and Joe, we had this idea of having an EP of reinterpreting 60s cover songs.
Right.
And so what you're seeing, actually, if you look through our discography, is a lot of those 60 songs are appearing on Spotify and Apple Music. From those sessions.
Yeah. Well, that's why I asked the question about the cover set of the, because there's, you know, most bands that aren't doing covers, they'll put a bunch of material and you can hear the recording quality and the writing quality change over the years. With you guys, you put out a version of the Red River Riot, but you say that, okay, well, we were also a cover band, like making money and playing parties, that sort of stuff. So, does the choice in cover set lend to what the sound is now of, you know, the Red River Riot?
That's a good question. I'm a firm believer that covers are a really great way for you to understand writing music. They're a great reference point. And every band, every artist, I think, who's cut their teeth doing anything and is recording anything, they've all done covers in some way, and they make, and when you're working with covers, you have an opportunity to do one of two things. One, you can really work on the technical aspect of it, of trying to do a faithful rendition of the original, or you have the other avenue, which is, all right, well, how can we make this song conform to us, mm-hmm. to our ideals, to our vision? And we've always gravitated towards the other way. I kind of call it the Van Halen playbook. They did those same things when they were in clubs in the 70s. So
yeah,
I'm a firm believer in that.
But, Chris, at the same time, when you're doing something like that, there's also a backlash from that fan base of, you know, because a lot of people, they just get it stuck in their head. Like, this is how it is. This is how I have a memory attached to it. And why are you trying to change what I love?
I've never dealt with that for the simple fact that we haven't reached a level of popularity that would warrant that kind of visceral reaction.
Oh no, this is just for personal experience of being a part of projects where there is a tribute to a band, and I was taking submissions to it, and like a long story short, people were just upset because that's not what they wanted, and it's just like, well, these bands are doing a tribute and they play this style of music, so this is who they are. Their interpretation of what, and I was always shocked that people missed the boat on that. It's like, okay, here's a band will influence so many different styles of artists, and this is their homage to them. Why are you throwing shade? You know, it's like, why are you throwing shade on inspiration?
I agree, and like I said, I'm firmly in the camp of you interpret the song the way you see fit. I'm not a fan of perfect recreations or trying to even get close to the original.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you because that's like, we already have that. I already have that. So, you know,
and I also think those covers that bands do are a real critical stepping stone for their own personal growth. I think that's something that's not really addressed too much. Like, it's a very different headspace writing your own songs versus taking a cover and trying to reinterpret it in your your own way, because you're going through a whole bunch of extra stages that you don't normally go through with writing your own song. I mean, you're dissecting the song when you're listening to it. You're mm-hmm. dissecting the original parts of it, and you're also trying to reinterpret and reimagine those parts based on your own language. And you're also infusing your own influences on top of it that you've acquired along the way, along with that band that you're covering at that moment.
Yeah.
So you're kind of applying all this extra knowledge that you've acquired over the years already on top of this thing. And then finally at the end, once you're done with it, you don't even realize it, but by the end, you've actually added almost a new, a technique, approach, your understanding increases, because you know you're getting into the head of the original songwriter, I think, when you're working on a cover, especially when you're working on it for a certain length of time, and you start to understand certain nuances and approaches that the original writer does. And I think you just can't help it, but simply through osmosis, those things that you observed when you were doing that cover kind of get transferred to you, and that's just like an extra tool in the toolbox for you when you're writing music later on.
Had time putting out some music now, and of course you released on Apple, Spotify now, and you put everything up on Bandcamp. So you guys are moving from, you know, the first stuff from 2017. You move on for a couple of years. You release the singles of the covers, that sort of thing, and even up almost recently, back in June, you released Eve of Destruction. But now we're moving into November, and O Night comes out, and this is are they all primarily original tunes that you put on this one?
It's all original.
Yeah.
Our, Personally, I prefer to put out records that are just original pieces of music, mm-hmm. and then letting the cover stuff just be these separate entities that are just appreciated in a different headspace.
Right. Now, it was 10 songs that you released. How many did you have in your pocket before you went into the studio?
Or
did you write some of them while you were in there?
Yes, we did. Okay. It was a lot of everything. Some of the stuff was stuff that simply did not make the first record, couldn't make it. Joe did some drum work for. I did some scratch tracks for. And then when we heard what we've recorded so far for the first album, we noticed that the way it was feeling that some of these extra songs were just simply not going to work. I mean, our hearts were set on like certain songs being on the first record. We're like, nah, this is not going to work. So a handful were carried over for the next record. And then there was three songs that were written with the band during the recording sessions where we went, okay, these three songs, specifically the two that come to mind are Memphis and You Are Your Weapon. We went, these should be on this record because they really represent a lot better the feel of what we're going for the record, right. and balances out the record a lot better.
Walk back through your memory, little diamond sitting still. No one knew the reckoning, could have told you, never will. Maybe on the morrow we'll be better than this, but my arms are finally failing me, and I can't break free to find my place with you. Should I follow like an addict on a base? Stay here.
Feels the same.
The music up there, it's people can go, they can listen to it. There, you did some writing in the studio, and you have some older songs. This fit, does it make sense to you? Does it tell a story of you guys? Because a lot of artists will put out an album, and it's just like, well, the single's from over here, and we recorded it in this studio in the West Coast, and recorded this song and this timeline at another studio, and Sometimes it just seems like they're trying to force something together. But with this 10 song lineup that you have, does it tell a story? Does it all fit together for you?
Yes. Yeah. Album. We're an album first band. The whole thing has to be in our eyes only, of course. From our perception, has to be perfect. Has to be the best thing ever that we thought we could do at that time. And there's always a theme in all of the work that we do. Even the songs from the first record and the second record are stories that have extended from that actually complement each other. There's actual stories that are talked about on the first record that are actually continued onto the second record.
Oh, so it doesn't. So you don't leave it alone. Like each album is its own entity, because some artists get into the fact that I've talked to. Well, they'll record something, they'll put it out, and then they go, well, you know what? Let's put that same song out on this next album, and let's do a remix of it because I feel it could be a lot better.
Okay. So for us, up until the second record, there was always this feeling that all the songs connected to one another in some big grand story. But unfortunately, when you start being cognizant of that, it starts messing with your head, and you start almost subconsciously trying to fit things into that story. So before we even got to the final decision of what songs would make the record, I think subconsciously said, well, let's not worry about whether or not all these songs connect to one another. We know that some do. We know that some may or may not. Let's just focus on writing some really great sounding songs. Because the most important thing for us, when we're doing a record is not if it's thematically consistent, but if it's sonically consistent, like the whole thing sounds like all these pieces shouldn't belong together. Yeah. The words are secondary. And if they, you know, if they make sense, great. If they don't, I really don't care. I mean, as long as it sounds really, if it sounds proper, if it sounds good to you, that's what we care about the most. And it is just kind of sometimes a happy coincidence that some songs actually do relate to, you know, other previous songs that we do. Musically, we try to always keep it varied and unique, but some of the concepts and stories that are talked about, they are repeated from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Or connected in some way.
So November 2020, O Night comes out. You're sending it around. You're sharing with people. You send it out for some press, that sort of thing, or for campus radio or anyone that'll give it a listen. You put it up there. At what point do you start talking about, okay, hey, guys, it's time to go back in the studio? When do you feel comfortable doing that? Or are you already doing that?
Well, COVID's made that difficult, and with the current lockdown measures, what we're going to do next, I'm not 100% sure. We've had discussions regarding, because we do have additional material that didn't make this second record, and we were thinking about, because it looks like playing live is still pretty far off on the horizon.
It's far off, but it's still going to be there eventually. You know, we probably will get a handle on this come September of 2021, I'm hoping.
Yeah. So we're looking at, you know, doing live streams a little bit more often. Again, the challenge is the lockdown. I know Joe's my neighbor and he's very close by. Ryan's a little further away. So we have to make sure, you know, we're all safe and we're okay if we want to, you know, continue doing live streams, which we were doing throughout 2020. And I know we have this extra material, so we've been contemplating whether or not we want to release an EP in the coming year, do more singles, or just say forget it, let's just go right back in the studio and do a third record. Or, like you said, if things ease up in September of 2021, just go out and play, because it has been a long time for us playing in front of a crowd. Hi, this is Chris from the Red River Riot. Check us out at www.theredriverriot.com.
$75 on cat toys, and what does she play with? A shoelace.
That's crazy.
Joe, that's been your answer every time I tell a story. It's like you're not even listening.
Well, that's because you interrupted me when I was telling you about Kevin trying to hang himself with an extension cord.
I know, that's crazy.
You're listening to Steel City Music. say, oh, night, I want it all in my control. Oh, night, I am calling you to help me. Oh, night, I don't want to be all alone. Oh, night, I am begging for your mercy. Oh, night, I want it all, I'd hurt alone. Na, 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 na.
I will not. This is CIOI 101.5 FM. The Hawk is on the air.
You're listening to Steel City Music with your host, Gunner, here. In this hour of music, a whole lot of extend-a-fun. I dig it. Sylvester, you make me feel mighty real. Cool funk track. McMadden and Whitehead, Ain't No Stopping Us Now. And of course, the late, great Marvin Gaye in this set of music. Got to give it up. A revisionist reflex mix. Also with Urges Muhammad, same as well. Could Heaven Ever Be Like This? And Heatwave with Boogie Nights. And one of my favorite tracks as a kid growing up, Rapture from Blondie. You're hanging out with Gunner on Steel City Music.
Parking lot and get in your car and drive real far and drive all night and then you see your light.